continue the interview next week. You can find out more about her work at EponaQuest.com. EponaQuest.com.
On the first part of the journey, I was looking at all the life. There were plants and birds and rocks and things. There were sand and hills and rain. I've been through the desert on a horse with no name. It felt good to be out of the rain. In the desert, you can't remember your name, 'cause there ain't no one for to give you no pain.
And that's it for this Magical Mystery Tour. Thank you so much for listening. If you missed any of the show or would like to hear it again, you can find this and all Magical Mystery Tour shows at soundcloud.com/WGDR. And until next time, take good care of yourselves and each other.
After 9 days, I let the horse run free, 'cause the desert had turned to sea. There were plants and birds and rocks. Ocean is a desert with its life underground and the perfect disguise above. Under the cities lies a heart made of ground, but the humans will give no love.
Hi, this is Mark Sanford Gross, and when I'm in Portland, I listen to KBOO, KBOO, 90.7 FM, Portland.
Election season is here, and at KBOO, we want Portlanders to be prepared to face their ballots with confidence. We've got a brand new limited series coming to our airwaves and your favorite podcast platform. It's called Running on Air, a daily radio roundtable conversation with the people running to represent Portland. Every weekday, your favorite KBOO host will be facilitating a deeper conversation with these candidates, so tune in. Find the full schedule on our website, kboo.fm/runningonair. Listen to any episodes of Running on Air that you miss on the KBOO website or wherever you get your podcasts. That's kboo.fm/runningonair.
Hey, we're Los Lonely Boys, and you're listening to KBOO.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 11:01 a.m. Next up is the bike show.
Hmm. 90.7 FM, streaming live on KBO.fm and carried by stations across the land and by Cornucopia Radio of the UK. Fall season greetings to all our listeners and to those celebrating the Jewish New Year, Shana Tova. May it be a year of peace and justice for all. We are glad you are here with us today and hope that this day finds you well as can be in these days of war and suffering, but also solidarity, resistance, and rebuilding. The show is co-hosted by Nedra Deadweiler and Alon Rab and engineered by Ty Walker. On today's show, we will talk with two guests who are active with organizations making mobility more accessible in their respective places of residence. In the first half of the hour, I'll be speaking with Suzanne Maas of Malta, who's works with Friends of the Earth Malta. And in the second half, Nedra will speak with Karpreet Singh of Atlanta Sopo Bicycle Cooperative, which, as its website states, is a nonprofit do-it-yourself bicycle repair shop that runs on volunteer power and generous donations. My name is Alon Rab, and I'm happy to be joined by co-host Nedra Deadweiler. Good day, Nedra. How are you?
Good day, Alon. I'm doing pretty well. How about yourself?
I'm okay. I haven't read the news today, so perfectly fine. The dogs are loving as usual. The forest is beautiful, and we're co-hosting a show, and so that's good. Atlanta has been a little bit in the news, though. Your state has been lately in the news, and with news about abortion rulings and election mayhem. Any good news in Georgia today?
Good news. The sun is shining, and it is bright, to quote Bob Marley. and I think we're feeling good.
And we're alive, and your wonderful four-legged family members are probably over there next to you. So a lot to be thankful for.
A lot to be thankful for, yes.
Okay, well, I'll say goodbye for now, and we'll reconnect at the half-hour mark.
Okay, have a good one.
As always, before we get to our guests, just a few news items from the vast bicycle universe. Usually I like to have cheerful news or news that talks about the great strides that cyclists are making in the world. But sadly, too many cyclists and pedestrians are hit by cars. Even one person is way too much. And the Portland cycling community lost recently a friend and activist who added so much to all cyclists and to the city in general. Sukuhu Vibulisiteri died recently after serious injuries sustained in a collision. He was co-founder of Bike POC PNW, a group that, in its own words, strives to create a brave space for BIPOC folks to ride, learn, and build community. His friends organized a memorial ride in his honor. May your memory be blessed, Soko. Wherever you are in this universe, I hope you're riding your bike with the same bravery and love that you did in this world. And the next news item is not specifically about bikes, but it made me smile and was a great boost of energy and hope. Thelma Ruby, a 99-year-old actor in London, has threatened to, quote, chain myself to the grounds of the Old England Wimbledon Club if controversial plans to build 39 new tennis courts at Wimbledon are approved. Ruby, who appeared in Coronation Street and on stage along Orson Welles and Judi Dench, and lives in a flat overlooking the tennis club, said she was determined to take a stand on environmental grounds. Asked whether she was worried about being arrested, Ruby replied, "No, I'm 99. Let them arrest me." A representative of the tennis club told her that all the trees will be cut down, a third 8,000-seat show court will be built along with 38 other grass courts, and that will take years to build. This beautiful view I get when I look out my window is not only going to be a building site, but there are going to be polluting lorries passing my window every 10 minutes, Ruby said. And we know in this day and age how important trees are. I look several times a day out of the window and enjoy my view, and it gives me strength to carry on. Those are the words of 99-year-old Thelma Ruby. And a final decision about building the courts will be made soon. So hooray to Thelma Ruby, to all 99-year-olds, and to people of all ages, to all defenders of the earth. And now we'll turn to our first guest. Our first guest today is Dr. Suzanne Ma, Climate Campaign Coordinator of Friends of the Earth Malta. The Malta chapter of the International Grassroots Environmental Network has been in existence since 1985. Dr. Ma holds a Master's of Science in Environmental Sciences and a PhD in Sustainable Mobility. In addition to her work with Friends of the Earth Malta, she's also the author of academic studies about cycling use and how to increase ridership. Good day, Dr. Ma, and welcome to the show.
Hi, good to be here.
How are things in Malta? If I recall, I've never been to Malta, but being a few other Mediterranean islands, it's kind of sunny most of the time. Is that the case over there?
Yes, definitely. Sunny here today. So as you rightly said, Malta is an island in island state in the Mediterranean. Right in the middle, actually. And, well, all's good here.
Good. And before we get to you and your work with bicycles and environmental work in general, Maybe a little bit. Can you tell us a little bit about Malta and its history? It's not one of those places that are constantly in the news. So tell us a little bit maybe about your home.
Yeah, sure. As you mentioned already, it's a very small country. It's an island state made up of different islands. The main island is Malta, then there are Gozo, Comino, and some smaller islands. It's the smallest EU member state, but a very interesting country with a very rich history. Just for comparison, when we talk about small, I quickly looked up how big is Portland, the city of Portland, where you're calling from.
Uh-huh.
It's actually bigger than Malta. So the country fits in your city. So Portland is around 376 kilometers squared, and Malta is just 316 kilometers squared. So it's really very small area size. But yeah, as I mentioned, it has a very interesting history. It has some of the oldest freestanding buildings in the world, the megalithic temples of Malta that are over 5,000 years old. It was ruled by many different powers in the past, from the Phoenicians to the Arabs, the Normans, the French, and finally the British, but now it is an independent country.
And each, as in many places in the world in the Mediterranean, each one of the conquering armies left wonderful buildings, archaeological sites, and also their DNA. So quite a variety, I'm sure, of architecture, of buildings. What is the topography like? What is the landscape?
So the islands of Malta have limestone plateaus that dip to a side. So it's rocky, it's hilly in some parts. There are valley systems, so there are some hills to climb by bike. But there are no mountains, so the elevation difference is not that great.
Mm.
And actually the main urban area around the capital city of Valletta is located on the eastern side of the island, which is closest to the sea level. So generally quite flat, but some of these valleys that we have to pass through.
And what is the population of the island?
The latest figures are around almost 500,000, or perhaps we've already overtook that figure. So very densely populated island state, yeah.
And I know it's tourism is a major industry, so probably a lot of tourists also come to the island. Tell us a little bit, please, about yourself, your own background. Were you always a cyclist?
Yeah, so actually I'm not from Malta originally. I come from the Netherlands, so that doesn't surprise us with the cycling, I suppose. Mm-hmm. I've been cycling since I was a young kid. But then it was normal, you know. If you've been to the Netherlands, or probably most people know about cycling in the Netherlands, it's so common that it's nothing special. It's just the way we move around. There is good cycling infrastructure pretty much everywhere. So it was never really a big deal. It was not something, you know, that was of particular interest to me, apart from just being my wheels to get somewhere. But once I moved abroad, first I spent a few months in Buenos Aires for an internship, and I started cycling there and realized, wow, this is a very different reality. And later then when I moved to Malta, which is now about 12 years ago, then I really realized, like, okay, cycling, being a cyclist is really sort of a state of being. It's an act, and therefore I joined sort of the cycling activism as well.
Mm.
So to really push for it. So very different from what I was originally used to, where it was just the mode of transport and nothing special.
And where did you grow up in the Netherlands?
Well, on an island as well, so I guess always an islander, and in fact, even my PhD research was on cycling, but also focused on islands, so this is something of a thread in my life, I suppose. So the island of Texels in the north of the Netherlands, very rural and quiet, but then I moved to the mainland, let's say, of course, to study.
So you're not opposed by principle to those of us living on the mainland and not on an island.
No, but I guess there is some level of quirkiness of being an islander, I guess, that made me want to go back to an island somewhere.
Yeah, I was a few years ago at a friend's house on an island off the coast of Maine, Vinyl Haven, and it's definitely, even though just being there a month, it's a different awareness, a different consciousness of where you're going and how far you could go and so forth. So you mentioned studying and writing. So what was your thesis about, and how did you choose mobility studies?
So I had already a master's in environmental science, and I was working on topics related to environment and climate and energy. So, of course, in that sense, mobility was always present as one of the issues, as one of the sectors that's responsible for energy use, for emissions, for pollution. But I decided to do my PhD at the University of Malta, basically in response to a call. Where there was a project, a European project, a Civitas project on sustainable mobility in Ireland, and so to work on that project, and at the same time to get the ability to do PhD research with the same institute at the same time. So it was decided sort of that obviously it has to relate to the topic of the project, so it had to relate to sustainable mobility in Ireland, but then there was a level of freedom to decide on the topic.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, then I decided to really to sort of combine this love of cycling and being somewhat of a cycling activist with also wanting to do research in that topic. And I chose to study sort of the role of bike share systems. So bike share systems, like in Portland, you have Bike Town. Many cities have these sort of public bicycle sharing systems. But I looked at sort of their use, their adoption, the role they played in the promotion of cycling in cities on the islands that were included in the project that are very car dependent, you know, so they have a very low cycling modal share. So the percentage of trips that are made with a specific mode of transport, so they would have less than 1% modal share of cycling. So very niche, very sort of subculture. And to see what role then these bike share systems can play in promoting cycling, and if that works or not, what is the relationship with cycling infrastructure, with origins and destinations, with elevation, with weather impact. So looking at very different factors, trying to debunk some myths around that as well. So saying, for example, you hear often that people say, we can't cycle here because it's too hot. But then actually when we looked at the data of the bike share, we didn't see that sort of reflected in the use of bicycles, you know, whereas what actually did impact a lot is the provision of safe infrastructure and the impact of sort of road safety concerns and other traffic.
Hmm. So you are listening to The Bike Show, broadcasting from the KBOO studio in Portland, Oregon on 19.7 FM. Streaming live on KBO.FM, carried by stations across the land and also by Cornucopia Radio of the UK, and available as a podcast at bikeshow.portlandtransport.com. The show is hosted by Nedra Deadweiler and Alon Rob, and engineered by Ty Walker. We're speaking with Dr. Suzanne Mal of Malta, climate campaign coordinator of Friends of the Earth Malta. So the name Malta, from what I read, might be from the Greek word for honey or the Phoenician for haven, port. You mentioned one place in Malta where only 1% of the population is riding. So I hesitate to ask you, but is the state of cycling in Malta as sweet as honey, and is it mostly safe sailing and pretty common as the Phoenician ships that made it even to Spain and Portugal?
Well, as you already preempted, not really, not so sweet as honey yet, no. So it's still a small modal share of cycling, so it's not very common. But we do have to say that you see in recent years an increase in number of people cycling, in different people cycling. So sometimes we refer to different groups of people that cycle, and only sort of the very young and able will cycle in conditions that are dangerous, you know, and in traffic. But actually, over the years, we see more other groups of the population cycling as well, so older people, more women, children, etc. So it is slowly picking up, but there is still a very long way to go.
And it seems like, you know, with sunny weather much of the year, small locale, you know, distances are small, and a, you know, densely populated country, it seems like cycling would, you know, be more than a minor share. So your work is cut out for you. And you're the climate campaign coordinator of Friends of the Earth Malta, an international organization. What is the focus of the organization? And are there any issues that are specific to Malta, that or all the issues you deal with, the same issues we unfortunately deal all over the world?
Well, I mean, we work in different campaign areas, so obviously some topics will be necessary to work on around the world. So our work focuses on three main areas. My campaign that I run is the climate campaign, in which we focus on climate, energy, and mobility topics. And then I have colleagues working on campaigns around food, agriculture, and biodiversity, and another colleague on sort of resource use, circular economy issues. And then in general, we work on environmental education, environmental awareness, which is of course necessary broadly. In the climate campaign, one of our main focus points is on stopping new fossil fuel infrastructure. So there is a proposal by our government to create a new gas pipeline between Sicily and Malta, when actually, as we know from the climate science, from the advice from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, we should be moving away from fossil fuels as fast as possible and invest public money in clean energy and renewables instead. So that's something that we work on. We also work on other climate solutions. So, for example, renewable energy communities. So these are projects where citizens invest together in renewables in their community, and we're trying to set up the first renewable energy cooperative in Malta, and mobility projects, of course, so teaching and promoting cycling, other sustainable mobility. We have a cargo bike as well as our organization that we bring sort of to events to showcase and also to practice what we preach, so to bring our stuff by bike instead of by car.
And I'm wondering about, you know, local municipalities and also the national government, how their attitude affects cycling. I read that according to a report in the Malta newspaper, The Shift, there's a transport master plan for 2025 that proposed a national cycling policy, including two pilot cycling corridors, but that there's a lot to do. And I'm wondering, what is that plan? Why has it not been implemented? And I could tell you that here in Portland, we also have a wonderful bicycle plan, Plan 2030, that envisions a major expansion of lanes and facilities and a goal of a quarter of all trips in the city being made by bicycles in 2030. But sadly, we're not meeting those goals. So what is the situation in Malta as far as the government?
Yeah, so unfortunately quite similar. I would say let's start on a positive note, that we do see that there is recognition that cycling is part of, you know, transport policy and should be promoted, especially in light of sort of our climate targets, in light of reducing fossil fuel use in transport. So we have seen an increase in sort of mentioning of that and proposing that. But I do have to say it feels like it's more words than actions so far. And indeed, this transport master plan is quite a good plan. It does mention, as you rightly say, the national cycling policy, which at some point there was a national cycling strategy published, but it was really a letdown for everyone working in the sector. Stakeholders, cyclists, the cycling advocacy group were not properly consulted. So this was really, a weak version of what it should have been and could have been. And indeed, those two pilot cycling corridors would have been a great idea to test in practice, if this can work, if we implement that and then see, are more people cycling on those corridors, and then can we create that, you know, can we expand on that? Can we turn that into a network that actually connects different areas? But unfortunately, that has always remained on paper, lots of talk and no implementation. So we are still there. Since then, we've had other plans being promoted. So the previous transport minister also said he would dedicate around 35 million to creating a cycling network. Again, now it's 2 years later. We're still waiting. We're not seeing anything happening in practice. So while I would say in the rhetoric, yes, we certainly have seen change, in reality, it's still a lot of waiting for that. And at the same time, we've seen a lot of investment in infrastructure for cars, in wider lanes, in more roads, in flyovers, that actually sometimes make cycling more difficult because crossings or intersections that before were possible, you know, to cross just being mixed in traffic, have now become so heavily trafficked or so many lanes that, you know, it just becomes too dangerous. So it's actually sort of counteracting what we need to see in certain areas.
And I read that there's an annual bicycle pilgrimage to the Church of Village of Zabar dedicated to Our Lady of Grace, who is also the patron of cyclists. So maybe more praying over there to get the bicycle plan in place. Can you tell us about that pilgrimage, and have you made it yourself?
Yeah, so actually, fun fact that I live in that village in Zabar. We bought a house here about 2-3 years ago, an old townhouse that we fixed up, really in the center. So actually, the pilgrimage finishes basically at our house. This is a very curious tradition, and very beautiful to see. It's several decades old already. And indeed, as you said, the patron saint of the village, so villages and towns around Malta have, or the parishes really, they all have their particular patron saint, and then they have a festa, the local feast associated with it. And this is celebrated very intensely, very loud, lots of fireworks, lots of parties, lots of religious processions, of course, as well. So a very curious mix of celebrations. And yeah, the Zabar one is a very special one because the patron saint is Madonna Tal Grazia, Our Lady of Grace, who is indeed the patron saint of two-wheelers, so of cyclists and also motorcyclists. This was a great surprise to me that there could be a patron saint of cyclists, but it is true. And in honor of that, then during this feast, they organize an annual bicycle pilgrimage and also a motorcycle pilgrimage separately. And this attracts literally thousands of people on bikes, so many from the town here, but also other people who like to cycle. And it's really an amazing scene because at the front there is this bicycle with the patron saint on a trailer with speakers, with the music, there are kids throwing like the little fireworks. It's a bit of chaos, but it's really impressive to see. And yeah, it's really a big pilgrimage taking over the streets. So it also gives those cyclists and people spectating a feeling of what life could look like if we were all on bikes instead of in cars.
Sounds wonderful. And in a strange coincidence, the other guest we had on the show, whose name is Suzanne, a friend of mine, Suzanne Shfik of Bethlehem, also lives in a town which is the center of prayers and pilgrimages. And Suzanne appeared on our show in May 2021. She spoke about cycling in Bethlehem and Rides for Peace. And I'd like to take this chance to send a warm embrace to you, Suzanne, and the safety and well-being of your family and all peace-loving people in the Middle East and elsewhere. Our time is almost stopped. I don't know what happened, but I wanted to ask you about a remarkable individual I read about, George de Bono. Can you tell us a little bit about him?
Yeah, so Malta has a cycling NGO. Now they are called ROTA, but before they were the Bicycle Advocacy Group. ROTA means bicycle or wheel, so they sort of rebranded with a simpler name. But the original Bicycle Advocacy Group was set up by several people, including doctor and cyclist George de Bono, who was really an inspiring figure. I met him only later in his life when I moved to Malta, but he had been campaigning on the topic of transport and specifically promoting cycling for a very long time. Of course, as a medical doctor, he focused a lot on the health impacts of the transport system, on the pollution, but also on the negative impacts of a sedentary lifestyle. And I remember him, you know.
Our call has been cut, so let's see if we could get it back. If not,
produce a number of reports.
Can you hear us, Suzanne?
Yes.
Okay, I think you got cut off for a second, so I'm glad you're back on. And you were telling us about the physician, musician, environmentalist, and cyclist George de Bono, who died. But his good deeds and the inspiring things he did are carried on. So, well, our time is about to be completed here, but quickly, what is next for you? Where might we find you in 5-10 years?
Well, right now I'm running a mobility project called Micromobi, in which we promote micromobility, so a bit wider than just bicycles, also scooters, cargo bikes, as alternatives to the polluting private car. So you'll see me promoting that. We're creating videos and awareness raising campaign to get more people interested in making that shift. What I hope for myself is that I get to continue researching and advocating for sustainable mobility. It's a tough field to work in. I mean, there is a lot of opposition, but it's also a beautiful field and a beautiful work to contribute to, to try to get more people to enjoy a happier and healthier lifestyle and cycle more for a better quality of life. And for Malta, I hope we can finally get some serious investment in a safe cycling network to show that this can work as long as the infrastructure is there and people feel safe. And of course, I'd be very happy to contribute to making that a reality.
Amen, amen. From your mouth to the ear of the Madonna, the patron saint of cyclists. I would like to thank you, Dr. Suzanne Maas, for being on the show. And of course, if you ever make it to our little island of Portland, please don't be a stranger. We'd love to go with you for a ride, host you in our home. So all the best to you. And thank you so much for the good work you do in this world and also your organization, Friends of the Earth Malta. Much success with your current and future projects. You're listening.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, all the best. You're listening to The Bike Show, broadcasting from the KBOO studio in Portland, Oregon on 90.7 FM. Streaming on KBO.FM and carried by stations across the land and in England too on Cornucopia Radio. In the second half of the hour, co-host Nedra Deadweiler will speak with Kartapreet Singh of Atlanta Sopo Bicycle Cooperative. Stay tuned. Nedra, you online? Can you hear me? We're waiting for Nedra and her guests to come on, so stay tuned. We've just been speaking with Dr. Suzanne Maas of Malta, who was telling us about the challenges on that little island in the Mediterranean, not too far from Italy, not too far from Libya, an island with a rich history, very densely populated, there's a lot of work to do there, as in many places, to increase cycling, to make it more safe. And it's good to always hear people like Dr. Maas talking about what is being done, talking about the individuals who are working. Nedra, are you on the line now? Okay, we'll take about a second or two, so bear with us. And wherever you are, I hope you're having a good fall season. Okay, Nedra, take it away. Nedra, you on? Go ahead, Nedra.
Can you hear me now?
Yes. Okay. Take it away.
Okay, great. On the second half of the show, Carter Preet will join. Carter Preet Seen as a volunteer coordinator at SoPo, Bicycle Cooperative in Atlanta. SoPo for the last 11 years, serving in many roles, including but not limited to being the board member, picking up donations, coordinating volunteers, leading bike bills, bike rides, and teaching various classes. Carter Preet enjoys the mission of making cycling more accessible. He is a native of Atlanta and loves to ride his bike with friends. Carter Preet, are you there?
I am. Hi, Nedra. Hi,
Alan.
Hi to all your listeners.
Oh yeah. It's good to have a conversation with you and have you here on KBOO Radio. How are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you today? I'm a little tired and very excited because, I love talking about my love and passion of cycling and the SoPo Bike Cooperative.
Yeah, so you've been a part of SoPo for 11 years, which is a very long time for any volunteer role. But before we get into SoPo, want to talk about you a little bit. And you are someone who's always very excited about anything that's bike-related, bikes, people who ride bikes. What is that joy about? Tell us about your excitement and why you have this passion for bicycling.
So I would say I fall into things backwards. You know, like nothing is ever, you know, most people, when they talk about their passion of bikes, it starts from childhood. It starts from like getting their bike and learning how to ride a bike and being able to like go places for the first time. Most of the American, you know, bicycle experience is like the freedom to go places. It's the first, it's one of the first freedoms children really gain. And for me, that wasn't the case. I taught myself how to ride a bike when I was 11. We would often go to, after the Sikh temple, we would go to a friend's houses. And if I got bored, there's nothing to do. So at my aunt's house, I would grab one of her son's bikes and I'd ride down the hill, like with my, you know, my feet not on the pedals. And then, you know, we lived on a steep hill, got a little adrenaline, and I'd walk back up and do it again. And then, you know, at some point I started pedaling and I didn't fall and I kept pedaling. For me, I taught myself how to ride. And then in between undergrad and graduate school, I was like, you know, this is 11 years ago. I said, you know, the United States oil policy is quite terrible. Our foreign policy is built on cheap oil and it's still built on cheap oil. And so I said, you know, what can I do to make the world a better place? And I said, if there are more bikes, there'd be less demand for oil. And so I said, you know, how can, when I learned about the SoPo Bike Co-op, I was like, oh, if I, you know, help people fix their bikes, you know, there'll be more bikes, more people will ride them. Unfortunately for me, when I walked in the door, the only thing I knew about a bike is that it had two wheels. And I knew how to ride it. serendipitously walked into the best place at the best time. And it was life changing, for me especially, because I met amazing people. Even though like my bike at the time was a bike I got at a garage sale for $20, and it was a 24-inch kids bike actually. Even though I was in my 20s, it was life changing for me, because I made amazing friends. I learned incredible skills. I discovered a lifelong passion for bikes.
That's pretty amazing. I think you might be the first person I've met who taught themselves to ride, at least that's, you know, as you described. So, and that came from a place of, like, boredom and curiosity, you know, versus, like, the childhood sort of entry point. So that's really cool. Thank you for sharing that, Carterpreet. What is a recent ride? Have you done any recent rides lately? It could be local or anywhere else.
I've done two rides that, like, really speak to, one, the Atlanta scene. Was it last weekend? In the last 2 weeks, there was a ride put on by there's an organizer here in Atlanta called MWR. An organizer of rides. You can find them at MWR Rides. They did an improv ride, which meant that the bike ride would go around various very unique and historic houses in Atlanta, and the stops there'd be improvisers doing scenes inspired by what they were looking at, which is the house. The idea was with improv, you never know what's going to happen. You don't know what's going to be said. And while the idea was, you know, it would be sort of like a mock history ride, like there's a local podcast that's quite popular, run by another prominent or amazing Atlanta cyclist, Victoria Lemos. I'll plug her, Archive Atlanta, because she does amazing work. Okay, you'd make up something about, you know, who lived in the house, you know, what their occupation was, you know, and their life in the past. It didn't take that role, but it was very fun and unique. And, like, I ran late, so I missed at the first house. I was running late to the ride. I got there after the ride had left, and there was a couple in the driveway. And so, you know, I asked, I was like, hey, did you guys see a bunch of people on bikes? Because I wasn't sure if I'd made it or if I was running early or late. Got to the ride, and they were like, oh yeah, there were 100 bicyclists just outside of our house. You just missed them.
Wow.
Why were they at our house? And I was like, I gave them the rundown I just gave, and they're like, oh wow. That's quite fun and interesting. And, you know, putting the fun in bicycles, it really showed that. And then this other ride, I would say it's more of a, I wouldn't say it's a ride, it's more like amazing. I went to Burning Man this year for the first time, and people can look up Burning Man, it's a long story, but it's a temporary city it's that 70 to 80,000 people show up to. And the number one mode of transportation by far is bicycles. And the city no longer exists. It was literally a month ago that I was biking around the city with a 7 mile square city, about 7 miles with many other with people, because it's the most efficient way to get around. And you can imagine with 70,000 people trying to do things, there was no traffic because most people were on bikes. There were no intersections. There was no signaling. There was no need, because most of the traffic was human powered. And so, like, it spoke to the power of bicycles and the efficiency of bicycles. And so, in both senses, like, these are both things I recently did that really, like, yeah, speak to the ape. And, you know, Burning Man was a lot of fun. So a lot of joy. There's a lot of joy in bicycles wherever they are, and whenever we use them, or I use them, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. That sounds really cool. Having never been to Burning Man, you kind of had a future, I guess, future-oriented society built on other types of ideals. And just, like, with that in mind, because you have done a lot of organizing, you're an educator, a bicycle educator, and just someone who's a staple here in the community. So when you think about like your ideals around accessibility and even kind of a response to climate issues or bringing people together or information sharing or whatever ideal, you know, other ideals you may have. What are some of the, what's inspired you to bring that into cycling? Is it, you know, people you've read about, different books, or just your own lived experiences? Not just, but, you know, and your own lived experiences.
I really like that question, because every time I ride my bike or I meet someone, it inspires me. Speaking of accessibility, so I remember this. We were in Grant Park. This is when I started to volunteer. Oh yeah, this was during the Great Recession. This definitely was during the Great Recession. This man came into the bike co-op, and he said it took him 4 hours to get to the bike co-op from where he was. Not because he didn't drive. He walked in. He was holding his bike in one hand and his wheels in the other. And he lived in Clayton County. And quick backstory, Clayton County, during the Great Recession, decided it couldn't afford its bus service, so it got rid of it. And so for this man to access affordable bike repair, he had to walk an hour. And then when he got to the bus, the edge of the closest bus stop to him, the bus driver said, "You can't put your bike on the bus. You can't bring your bike on the bus because it doesn't fit on the front rack," because he couldn't get the wheels on the bike. And so this long, laborious, like, trek for this man to build a method of transportation so he could, A, get home, just to get home, much easier, and not take 4 hours, like, really, like, shows that there's a large gap among cyclists. When we think of cyclists, we often think of, it used to be, you know, the person, usually a white male or white men, who are in Lycra and on very fast, on lightweight road bikes, and like all the latest technologies, riding in a pack in front of you, or, you know, like taking that space in front of you. But the number one cyclist in America is usually a person of color. It's usually their only mode of transportation, and they're just trying to live and survive in a world that, like, oppresses, beats, and beats up the poor. I really do feel like we, as a society, making cycling more accessible isn't just like putting the fun in bikes. It's uplifting, and it's a service to the community, because we, bikes are the most accessible form of transportation. For many people, they are the only form of transportation. It's not the freedom to, like, to go ride with your friends, but it's the freedom to get to work, to be on your own schedule. It's the freedom of a car without the expense of a car. This is the best way I would describe my passion for making cycling more accessible. In a car-bound society with high costs, cars are a financial drain. They are. Insurances are rising. Car insurances are rising because cars are getting more expensive. Not only are they getting more expensive, all these self-driving cars and all these gadgets, they're expensive, and they're in the car bumpers. And when cars hit things, they hit, you know, the bumpers first. So car insurance rates are rising faster than most people can imagine, because it's just the way cars insurance is. And so, like, keeping everything else, all this technology is more expensive, so your upfront cost of buying a vehicle are higher as well, and the cost to maintain all this technology is high as well. So a bicycle is it's the freedom of a car without the expense of a car, in my opinion. And so And for those that you know can't afford, or those that cannot afford a vehicle, to be honest, like if we got rid of cars, if we reduced our usage of cars extremely, like the societal benefits are immense. Mm-hmm. So one less car. Sorry. I'm all about that.
Yes, car. Yeah. Let me make a station announcement real quick. You are listening to KBOO Radio. I am Nadja Detweiler, and my guest today is Karthapreet Singh from Sopo Bicycle. You know, what you were just saying around the benefits and almost even the cost, the benefit of bicycling and then the cost of being a vehicle-forward society versus a bicycle-forward society, I think that is really important and, like, the crux of the issue. Coming down to the environmental concerns of cars, and actually cars are, yeah, they're more expensive, but I don't know if they're necessarily better or safer because they're mangled in accidents. You're like, how did someone survive that crash? And the pulling out of the minerals from the earth and the life of people who are mining those minerals is very destructive. And so, you know, the cost of having a vehicle that's built around technology and use technology is not necessarily making us our societies better or safer. So thinking of society forward, what you experienced at Burning Man, and then also, you know, thinking of what Sopo offers in its bike shop, what do you see, like how that intersects and some of the opportunities that we have to, say, move the needle a bit forward, even here locally. You know, like, we have new bike infrastructure that is still kind of, I think, in the works, right? Like, yeah, you've been in these streets for a while, even before 11 years ago. But, like, what are some thoughts on the accessibility and broadening it so that, you know, even with the e-bikes that we have coming online, rebates for e-bikes, any thoughts with increasing that and just getting more people on a bike, the safety aspect, and using it for daily transportation?
I've had this conversation with a fellow co-op member a lot over the last 11 years, a good friend of mine.
Right.
And, because, is this better?
Oh, I hear you just fine.
Okay. Sorry. It sounded like I broke up, but, my good friend, we're going to disagree for the end of time, disagrees about the investment in cycling infrastructure, not because he hates cycling or hates cycling infrastructure, because of the effects on the community. Investing in cycling infrastructure leads to gentrification. And Atlanta is unaffordable. It's past affordable. It's unaffordable. And communities, entire communities, are being pushed out rapidly, and they are poor. And where are they going to go? Where rents are increasing rapidly, gentrification is destroying the soul of Atlanta. So whilst I love to see cycling infrastructure, it really saddens me that it's used as a tool of removing people from their houses and their communities.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, so after Burning Man, I drove to San Francisco, and someone said, you know, they have a housing crisis far worse than Atlanta does, and people are living in like trailers and in their cars on the side of the roads. And what someone pointed out was that they're using the local businesses who want to remove who want to remove the people living next to their businesses. They say, oh, we're going to put on cycling infrastructure, and now we remove now cycling infrastructure is coming, and we have to remove people who are living, where the cycling infrastructure is coming. It's not that bad in Atlanta, but it is
getting there.
I wouldn't be surprised if we hear that. Like, it's bad. Atlanta is using cycling infrastructure as gentrifying communities at a, very rapidly, and so it's a mixed bag. Like, we are building out a cycling network is slowly coming together. A safer cycling network. It's not going to be safe. We still prioritize vehicles over people not in vehicles. So that's a point I very clearly want to make, that we as a society need to find a way to build cycling infrastructure without destroying communities. We can do that. We as a society can do that. We put men on the moon and brought them back. The human experience is endless, and everything is possible. We just don't want to as a society. We don't prioritize communities, and especially communities of color. We do not prioritize them in any way, shape, or form.
I would say it's kind of that question of who is cycling for, and the image that people have in the mind of, the big collective image is a mammal versus, white man in lycra versus the everyday cyclist, the person of color, the person whose only means of transportation is a bicycle. That is not considered a cyclist, a bicyclist. And so really changing that is the narrative work that has to take place. Maybe another question before we get to the end of our time. So you've been involved with, let's kind of look at SOPO a little bit. You've been involved at SOPO. Can you tell us what SOPO is and how it's been a transformative, had that transformative role in making bicycling more accessible and the community that has come around it?
So while we are a co-op, our membership requirements from day one have been everyone who walks through the door or interacts with us in any way, shape, or form. Our accessibility is our mission, and we do that primarily through our location right now, which is in the metropolitan loss in the West End. For now, speaking of gentrification, we are getting gentrified. The warehouse complex that we're in right now just was bought for $40 million by a healthcare company. So in a couple of years, we probably won't be there. Our mission is to make cycling more accessible. The way we do that is mainly through our shop right now. We run various programming in the past, taking SOPO on the community and bringing the community in. But mainly right now, it's our we basically are a bike shop. You walk in with your bike, or you come looking for a bike, and we can sell you a bike that fits your needs if we can, or you can build. We fund ourselves mainly through the bike shop as well, and we ask for $5 a part or $5 an hour for the time you spend, but you can always donate more. So you walk into the shop, you're greeted, you're asked how can we help you, and our vault, we have a lot of parts. And so a lot of them are used and good parts. and our volunteers teach you how to fix your own bike. We're not just making cycling more accessible. Our goal is to put ourselves out of business, to empower everyone with the knowledge to fix their own bikes. Most volunteers will not touch your bike, are not supposed to touch your bike, because the goal is we've got the parts and we've got the tools and we've got the knowledge. Our goal is to give you the parts, let you use our tools, but you leave with the knowledge of how to fix your own bike.
Yeah, that sounds, I think the challenge that you just talked about, you know, that whole thing of sustainable business and everything else that is taking place, it makes it a bit more difficult. And that if communities, and I would say the larger city, want this service, want the city to be equitable, that this needs to be factored into the bottom line as a form of community development, and to be able to maintain these facilities and at various locations so that people can access them. So, we are at the end of our show. I just want to thank Alon Robb, my co and Moz of Marta, and Carter Preet Singh of Atlanta, and engineer Ty Walker and Chris Smith and Josh Hetrick, who edited and archived the show. And thank you, our listener, for joining us. You can reach out to us, alonkrobb@gmail.com, civilbikes@gmail.com. You can find SoPo Bicycle Cooperative online at sopobikes.org, Carter Preet. And if you go there, you'll see Carter Preet for sure. Thank you for joining us today. And yes, and all of your amazing insight. And take care of yourself. Hope to see you soon. We do have a ride, yeah, technically, and ice cream.
Thanks so much for having me.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is Jazz Lives, right after these news headlines.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM.